You are listening to the Post-Atomic Horror Podcast with Ron Algar Watt and Matt Robotham. Episode 81, covering The Enemy and The Price.
Hello, friends. We're back.
Friend listeners.
Yes, I call them friends every week, Matt, really.
Yeah, I know. Sometimes I don't pick up on it.
They're my friends. Okay. And your friends, too. They're our
friends. We haven't had a Harry Mudd reference in a while.
That's
true.
Harry Mudd was supposed to come back in Next Gen, and the dude died.
Yeah, he did die. Thanks a lot, Harry.
Yeah, thanks a lot, that guy.
No, he was supposed to be in that episode, the episode with the Deep Freeze guys.
Oh, that's right.
80s guy and Tex.
And where is Tommy?
Tommy's mom.
Yes, Tommy Mommy. She actually was in on our last supplemental show, I talked about a book by Christopher Bennett, The Buried Age, which was quite good.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
Her character was in another one of his books about the time cops.
Oh, really?
The Department of Temporal Investigations. She is a counselor for them for people who are displaced in time.
She's a counselor for people who can't find their son, Tommy.
Yes. If you can't find Tommy, talk to this lady. She knows all about Tommy grief counseling. No, it's cool. She's, she helps people who are displaced in time and have never, don't know how to deal with the future and all that. And it's very cool.
They actually managed
to make her not terrible.
Right. This is Tommy Mommy. He's a good mummy.
He likes his chin rubbed.
Wow. Was that a Mummy Mum Muggy reference?
Yes.
Very nice. Nicely done. So, you know how you guys like it when we do one really good episode and one kind of shitty episode? This is one of those times.
Oh, man, was it ever.
So hopefully episode 81 will go down in history as one of the better post-atomic horrors because we really loved one and really hated the other.
Yep.
And the one we loved was mine.
That is how that normally goes.
Listen, I give you first crack pretty much every week. I say, here's our two episodes. Which one do you want?
Mm-hmm.
It's up to you.
Luck of the draw.
I will not take the blame for this. This week, we also have two Seinfeld-y titled ones. We have The Enemy and The Price. So,
picturing Worf standing at the side of a pier. Suddenly stands up, runs off.
See, I picture Worf as Putty, wearing the 8-ball jacket. 8-ball. All right, let me tell you about The Enemy.
You stole my Jesus, Petleth!
This is why you are not going to Stovalcore.
Ah!
All right.
Great, now I'm just picturing Julia Dreyfus with trill spots, and that is hot.
Yeah, it is. Let's just ponder that for a moment.
Holy shit.
Now let's talk about The Enemy.
All right,
so the Enterprise responds to a Romulan distress call on Galornden Kor, which incidentally is a great planet name to say in our horrible Noonien Soong voice. Galornden Kor. It's on the Federation side of the neutral zone, which means that the Romulans are actually in violation of treaties and so forth this time. Finally, Picard can be a total douche to someone else in the neutral zone for a change. Riker, Geordi, and Worf are exploring the planet, which is plagued by fog machines, wind noises, and storms of charged particles, which I guess is a new type of rain we haven't discovered in Seattle yet. Eh? Seattle weather joke. Eh? Anyway, Geordi takes a cue from the captain and falls down a hole. Riker and Worf spend the rest of the teaser, maybe 15 seconds, looking for him before deciding that he's nowhere to be found and beam back upstairs with a Romulan survivor. Then Riker yells at O'Brien for a while. Nice displaced anger, Nails. On the planet, Geordi uses some of the most badass science tricks ever committed to film to escape from the hole. He detects metal ore in the walls using his visor, digs it out, melts it with his phaser, and builds a pair of climbing spikes to pull his way out. Seriously, Geordi has never been cooler. This completely makes up for that weird Leah Brahms stuff from last week. Back on the Enterprise, Crusher actually ignores her kid for a while and tries being a doctor, determining that their Romulan captive will die if he doesn't get some kind of special gunk for his blood. This gunk can only be found in Worf, for some reason. Sure, why not? Worf refuses to give a transfusion to the Romulan and spends the rest of the episode saying no to a procession of increasingly higher ranked people. Picard ultimately tells him that he can't order him to help the Romulan, but he would be awfully disappointed if he didn't. Oh, so he's that kind of dad. Worf, to his total credit, never backs down and the Romulan dies. On the planet, meanwhile, Geordi is briefly taken prisoner by, but eventually befriends, Centurion Bahra, another Romulan. You ever see the movie Enemy Mine? Yeah, it's like that. Except the part of Dennis Quaid is played by Geordi LaForge, which is ever so much cooler. Using their combined powers of friendship and being able to see things, Geordi and Bahra make it to the Enterprise just before a tense showdown between Picard and Romulan Commander Tomalak escalates further. Picard stares Tomalak down, the day is saved, and I think I just came a little. Yeah, this episode was really that good.
Yeah, it was. Holy shit.
This just, there was nothing that I could, like, when we get to my good thing, bad thing, I couldn't find a bad thing. It's so fucking good.
No, from the second that Geordi fashions these spike things and just crawls out of this hole, it's completely fucking badass.
And badass in a way that a science guy would be.
Yeah.
He's not a muscle guy, he's not a fighter, he's not a phaser guy, he's an engineer, and he engineers a way out. It's awesome.
Like, we talk about how, like, Picard gets, like, is getting a badass moment every week.
And he gets one here.
Yeah. This is the first real Geordi badass moment.
Well, I said this last week. We finally got an episode where Geordi gets something to do, and we get two in a row, which is fantastic, because he's a great character, he's a great actor, and it's good. First of all, okay, yeah, we see that he's a loser with the ladies, but now it's good that we see some good stuff, too.
Mm-hmm.
So, let's go right into my good thing. My good thing is everything. Geordi the science badass, Worf standing his ground, viably threatening Romulans, Picard doing the whole Kirk stare down thing with Tomalak. This is one of those quintessential Next Gen episodes. They get everything right. There's some really complex moral stuff, but they never manage to lose sight of Gene's usually stifling vision. Because ultimately, at the end, it's about Geordi and this Romulan making friends, which is very Gene, but not in a bad way.
No, and like, I, when we watched this, I assumed that any minute now, Gene was going to run downstairs and be all like, you can't have Worf just
in the episode.
Yeah.
Gene would actually appear on screen.
Yeah. Hi, I'm Gene Roddenberry, and I'm not okay with this.
Stop it. Stop that. Stop it at once. This is silly.
In my vision of the future, I...
Oh, shut up. Everyone rolls their eyes. Here we go. But no, you were saying on Memory Alpha, it says that Dorn wanted Worf to back down at the end, too. Yeah. I'm so glad he didn't.
Yeah, no, he said he was worried that Worf would be viewed as a murderer.
No. He's viewed as, like, this is honor. This is Klingon honor. He says the word, but now you actually get an idea of what it means.
Yeah, like, these guys killed his family. He is not going to fucking give them, like, a drop of his blood to save them. And that is friggin' badass.
And there's a great scene between him and the dying Romulan, where the Romulan realizes Worf can help him. And he's like, I would rather die than have your Klingon filth in my veins. In fact, lean closer so my last dying action can be strangling your ass.
Mm-hmm.
Everything about this is badass. There is not a moment in this episode that isn't totally badass.
Yeah. And it really, like, I got a real, like, I felt this episode.
You got
really
a real boner? Because I did.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Okay. A boner for you to gnaw on?
Yes.
No, I felt like this episode was a real callback to the sort of classic Romulan episodes of the original series.
It really was, like, but it put its own stamp on it, so it didn't feel like a retread either.
Yeah, no, like, it's definitely a TNG episode. You know, you get that from Picard's, Picard and his negotiations with Tomalak. But it's still got that tension to it.
Yep.
That, like, the best Romulan episodes of original series had.
But I think we talked about this before, too. I don't know that they could pull off in the 80s and 90s the same kind of an hour-long, are they going to shoot, are they not going to shoot?
Mm-hmm.
It's really only the last act in this, which makes it better because a lot more stuff happens because that's how we tell stories now.
Yes.
Which works a lot better.
Mm-hmm.
My bad thing? Fuck, I don't know. I mean, I guess it didn't really make sense that Worf was the only one who could help a Romulan, but they actually addressed that with a couple lines of dialogue, and that's really all I care about.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care technically what it means. If there's a good dramatic reason for it and they just address, we know, that's fine with me. It doesn't have to make sense. I do hate that the Romulans had a lot of promise starting with this episode and it kind of fizzles into season 4, but that's not really this episode's fault. So, all right, I'll say my bad thing is that every episode isn't this good. Seriously, I could not find anything. I tried so hard. It's just and it's not even my favorite one. It just, quality-wise, it hits all the right notes.
Yep. Okay, so my good thing is just, I love Worf in this. I love him. I love him not refusing to back down from his beliefs and a guy dying because of it.
And he gets a lot of great scenes between, like I said, an escalating parade of people. Like, he talks to Riker, he talks to Picard, he talks to Beverly. There's some really good stuff there.
All three of those scenes are excellent.
Yep.
Like, because you got Beverly who takes the side of, like, no, this guy is going to die. I am a doctor. I am going to save him.
Yeah, and this is the first time I don't hate her, where she's actually doing some doctor stuff. Like, good. Finally, yes.
Yeah.
More of this, please. Time. Yep.
And Riker's thing is like, look, you know what I'm going to say. You know what the right thing to do is, but I can't force you to do it.
Yeah.
And Picard is like, look, I am not going to order you to do this.
But
I am asking you, we need you to do this, but I won't force you to go against
your
beliefs.
Yeah, because as the Romulan ship is racing toward them, he's like, this could be an incident. If we have a dead Romulan, this could be it. Like, this could start a war. If you don't help us, you could be the one that causes the war.
Yeah, and Worf is like, I am literally prepared to go to war over this.
Well, plus, that's not a threat for him. Go to war with Romulans? Great. Awesome. Let's go. It's the Federation, the rest of the Federation that doesn't want to. Worf wants that.
Yeah, but at the same time, you don't feel like Worf is acting, like, irresponsibly or anything?
No, he doesn't come off as a dick at all. He comes off as someone who is principled.
Yes. Like, that's the kind of thing where I would normally be watching the episode and be like, what the fuck is wrong with you? There's a fucking war on. Give him the damn blood.
Yeah.
But you get it.
But see, this is how you write good conflict.
Mm-hmm.
You give both sides equally valid reasons, and you put them at odds with each other. They don't have to be evil to be in conflict with each other. I think that's what Gene didn't understand.
Yeah.
Worf is totally valid. Picard and Riker and Beverly are totally valid, and they're just at odds, and it makes for good drama.
Yeah.
So, yeah, fantastic. What do you got for a bad thing?
My bad thing is that there was something about Tomalak's makeup that really bothered me, and I couldn't tell what it was.
Tomalak didn't exactly have pointed ears. He has sort of long ears.
He was a very strange Romulan. He has a very square-shaped head, too.
The thing is, if you look at the actor himself, he's a very strange-looking guy. I think they tried to Romulan up the wrong kind of face type.
Yeah.
He just doesn't have the right face for a Romulan. But the acting, like the guy they get to play him, is great. And they're kind of setting him up. He comes back a couple more times, and they're setting him up to be sort of Picard's arch nemesis.
Mm-hmm.
But it never really pays off, and I hate that.
Mm-hmm.
Because the Romulans were mostly talked about in the original series. They weren't in any of the movies. And we're like, okay, next gen, finally, the Romulans are back. Let's do this.
Mm-hmm.
And season 3, we get them a few more times, and there's some really good episodes. And then it's just kind of like, nah, we don't want to do Romulans anymore.
It's like, you know who's a good Romulan villain? Tasha's weird daughter.
Yeah, that's probably why it fizzled out.
That's much better, right?
Eventually. No.
The answer is no.
Thanks. Don't spoil anything for people.
Shh.
The thing is, and then when Deep Space Nine gets to it, they just say, you know what? We'll make better Romulans and we'll call them Cardassians.
Yep, and they did.
That's essentially the same, like, they're you know, deeply bureaucratic. They have really, you know, like, their government is crazy Orwellian, spies on its people, kind of, you know, intricate bureaucracy stuff. And they all weird cloak and dagger stuff, and it's really cool, and it just works better for the Cardassians anyway.
Yep.
But it's disappointing. But
of course, DS9 also made the Romulans kick ass when they did show up.
That's true, too. But Tomalak himself, I mean, the actor's good.
Mm-hmm.
The makeup's a little weird, but the actor's good, and he has a lot of really good scenes with Picard, where they're trying to outguess each other, outbluff each other, and there's just a lot of really great moments, and he holds his own with Patrick Stewart, which is not an easy thing to do.
No, it's not.
Especially since they shoot most of those view screen scenes separately, so that's even harder to do.
No, this is exactly what I'm talking about. These specifically the scenes between Picard and Tomalak are the ones that call back to that tense balance of terror stuff for me.
Right. Only Picard is a different kind of negotiator, so you're not just getting the same story.
Absolutely.
You're getting the same setup, but here's how Picard handles it, which is equally well, but different.
Mm-hmm.
Don't compare yourself, man. It ain't healthy. No, every part of it, and the Geordi stuff, the Geordi and Centurion Bakra stuff. Are you familiar with the movie Enemy Mine? We didn't actually talk about it.
I don't think so, no.
You should see it. It's great.
Okay.
It was made in the 80s. It's Dennis Quaid and Lou Gossett Jr. plays the alien. It's a sci-fi movie, but it could essentially be like a World War II movie because it's basically the story of two soldiers from opposite sides shot down on the same planet and having to survive together.
Huh.
And it's really good. It's a two-hander, basically. Like, I think there's some setup at the beginning and they're rescued at the end or blown up at the end. I don't remember what happens. But I'm saying, like, 90% of the movie happens with the two of them in a cave and no other actors and no other sets.
Wow.
And it's just fantastic.
All right.
It's well worth looking at. But I'm pretty sure they were deliberately drawing from that because it's a lot of the same stuff where they don't trust each other at first. I don't think they have the same dynamic where one of them trusts the other and then they have to win. Like, I think they're both mistrustful in the beginning.
Yeah.
Whereas here you got that great Geordi he's scared, but he refuses to show it, so he's just doing this sort of sarcastic jokey thing that he does.
Yeah, we got to see the sort of return of season one sarcastic Geordi.
Well, and it's nice because it ties together. It makes mm-hmm. him feel like one whole person instead of he just shifted dramatically.
Yeah.
That's what he falls back on when he's uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm. Also, I like this episode because it proves that Geordi can make friends with anyone.
Yes, he is so likable. He's apparently not fuckable, but he's likable. No, it's great. And seeing him win this guy over, this hardcore soldier who's just like, fuck you, you're my prisoner. And eventually he's like, oh, Geordi's my friend.
Yeah. No, I wouldn't fuck him with a stolen dick, but best friends forever.
Yeah. I thought briefly there might be some slash out there somewhere of Geordi and Centurion Bakra. And now, I don't know, because Geordi don't shiv.
He balls nasty.
No, it's fantastic. It's just a great, you know, two guys have to put aside their differences and become friends thing. And again, very Gene, but in a good way.
Yeah, it's actually really nice. Like, this episode shows, like, two people coming together to sort of overcome adversity and kind of almost the opposite of that.
Yeah.
Like, one of these guys is willing to overcome, like, you know, being at war forever, and the other one is just not.
Yep. And it's a good character piece, and it's one of the only times I can think of where, first of all, the A story and the B story are related,
mm-hmm.
but second of all, that they're connected like that thematically.
Yeah.
That they're about the same thing and not just different parts of the same plot, but actually exploring, like, it's a really good look at Worf, and it's a really good look at Geordi.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, oh, God, I love this. I want to watch it again. Can we just do all that? Right. Can we just turn off the recording
and
go watch
it
again?
All right, so we'll be skipping my episode and watching this episode again.
Hey, that would be fine. And then you could do a summary of it, because that would be better than what we have. Really, though, I mean, you know, I know we're here to say funny stuff, and this is going to happen when we just get these amazing episodes. It's going to happen through season 3 for me and off and on through the rest of Next Gen, and it's going to happen through most of DS9. I love it. I don't have a lot bad to say. I mean, I pointed out all the goofy stuff in my summary. They didn't look for Geordi very long.
No.
That was a thing. Riker yells at O'Brien. Riker's really angry through the first part of We Can't Find Geordi, which is pretty great.
He is, but it's totally understandable.
No, it's in character, but it's still kind of funny.
Yeah, he fucking lost Geordi.
Yeah. And he knows he did. He's blaming himself.
Yeah.
No, it's fantastic. Wesley kind of half-assed contributed to saving the day, and that wasn't even annoying.
Nope.
I think just about everyone has something to do. I think Data and Troy don't do much, but everyone else kind of throws, you know, kicks in something.
No, actually, I was reading Marina Sirtis was supposed to actually have, in an early draft of this, she was supposed to have been on the planet too, and they dropped her.
I think that's probably better. I think it might have been an interesting, it would have been a different episode is all.
Yeah, no, it definitely would have suffered for having two Starfleet guys down there.
Don't know that it would have suffered. I just don't think you would have gotten the Geordi and Bakra thing. I think you would have gotten Geordi and Troy bonding, which might have been cool in a different way.
I just, like, my whole thing is that, like, you have two Starfleet guys down there and suddenly, like, you don't, like, the Romulan's no longer a threatening presence. He's outnumbered, right. Even if he's got it.
Against the blind guy and a chick who can't do anything? I don't know.
No, that numbers thing still doesn't do it for me.
Fair enough. All right. So anything else? Are we ready to press on to
I think you can just the marble rye.
All right. My quote is just Geordi being cute at Bakra.
A Romulan ship will arrive shortly. You will accompany me on board.
I don't think so. See, we heard your message too, and well, the fleet's in, Commodore. Sky's full of Federation ships.
You're lying.
I never lie when I've got sand in my shoes, Commodore.
And that's it. There's a lot of like nice Geordi laugh lines. And I almost went with some of Worf's, like, badass, you know. There's a bit where, you know, he'll die if you don't da-da-da-da. Nice long pause, then he will die.
Yeah, it's awesome. Fucking,
yeah, I almost went with that. But Geordi was so funny, I wanted to go with one of those.
Yeah, and in his defense, he did have quite a lot of sand in his boot.
There was a whole lot of sand.
Yeah. Get a nice cut of him pouring that and dumping that boot, and Jesus Christ, if there's not a lot of sand in there.
I'm pretty sure there was a time cut. I'm pretty sure they cut away, and they cut back, and he was still dumping his sand out. All right, Matt, we can't put it off any longer.
All right.
You got to talk about the price.
All right, so the Enterprise arrives at some planet of brace-faced people who have apparently discovered a stable wormhole to the Gamma Quadrant. No, this isn't an early preview for DS9. I wish. Instead, we get tense, I mean extremely dull negotiations over who gets rights to this thing so that they can be the first to open up trading with the Gamma Quadrant and get the Dominion War started early. All sorts of people are bidding on the wormhole. The Ferengi, the giant tree people, the Federation, here represented by ace negotiator and king of the Mexican drug cartels, Mendoza! And the Chris alien from the Chris planet, represented by smugging Von Dushington III, one of those bland, boring white guys that Troy is forever falling in love with. So it comes as no shock to anyone when she falls in love with his dull ass, because Troy falls in love at the drop of a hat. Any hat. Mendoza is poisoned by an exploding salmon puff sent over by the Ferengi, and so Riker must now serve as chief negotiator for the Federation. He and Smuggy go back and forth negotiating and blah, blah, blah. Forget all that. Here's an extended sequence of Troy and Beverly working out wearing tights. Meanwhile, Geordi and Data take a shuttle through the wormhole and are followed by some Ferengi who are mad that they didn't get to go too. Upon arriving, they discover that the wormhole does not in fact lead to the awesome and interesting Gamma Quadrant, but instead the boring, repetitive, overusing the Borg Delta Quadrant. They beat Cheeks for home, leaving the Ferengi to ponder an eternity of sitting in a damp Ferengi shuttlecraft. Back on the ship, the head Ferengi guy threatens the wormhole by shooting missiles at it, basically the equivalent of threatening a well by throwing rocks down it, and Deanna, pissed at Smuggy because he's just awful, reveals to everyone that he's a little bit Betazoid. Data and Geordi return from the wormhole and reveal that it's a dud, and everyone goes home irritated and disappointed. Except me. I go back to watch this workout sequence again.
Yes, you did fixate on the workout sequence.
Look, if there's one thing I enjoy, it's those two in tights. Holy shit.
It's those two scissoring.
Yeah.
Into the dance studio or wherever the hell it is they are.
Yeah, apparently it was a ballet studio in the Enterprise.
Yeah, why not?
For all the ballet recitals Data puts on.
I think that was one of the conditions of Beverly coming back. Well, I'll come back, but only if you turn one of the rooms into a dance studio.
Very well.
All right. I totally lost my shit again. This was the only good... I'm actually going to change my good thing when we get to it in a sec. Shooting a missile at the wormhole. Jesus Christ. They're firing bullets at a hole.
Captain, he's shooting the wormhole with missiles.
Oh, no.
So? will that affect it at all? No.
No. No, not, but the red alert really. Is set to tell you stuff like this, so I thought you should know. All right.
It's probably best you be informed. Oh, well.
Noted.
I guess they could maybe hit our guys.
Yeah, that would be bad. Oh, my God. Okay. Well, why don't you go into your good thing, bad thing first?
All right. There's a germ of a good idea here. I like it's the whole space sci-fi politics thing again. I like the idea of having all these guys negotiating over this thing.
Well, and they sidestepped the whole money thing nicely by negotiating in resources.
Yeah, exactly.
You can have this stuff we mined off our planet, and you can have rights to these shipping things. Mm-hmm. And they made it plausible without giving up on Gene's stupid we don't have any money thing.
Yeah. Unfortunately, it's not nearly as interesting as it could be.
Well, no.
Also, you know, seriously, Deanna and Beverly in tights doing sexy workouts. Clearly, Star Trek got that letter I sent.
You sent back in time.
Yes. Dear right. Star Trek... I am from the future. Please put your ladies in tights.
And have them press their vaginas against each other. Your friend in time, Matt Robotham.
Matt Robotham.
And your bad thing, as if you could only pick one?
I hate Smuggy so much.
Oh, God.
Every scene he's in, he's just completely infuriating. He's this wonderful, perfect blend of dull blandness and self-centered jerkery, and I just want to punch him in the face.
Troy keeps falling for guys like this. What is wrong with her?
We realize she really has a type, and that type is the most boring white guy possible.
I would like a white bread sandwich on mayonnaise, please. God. And he just, everything about him. We had a little debate. If he was douchier than the outrageous O'Connor, and I believe we came to a consensus that yes, in fact, he is.
Yes.
It's that bad.
The outrageous O'Connor was much more irritating, but this guy was just so pleased with himself.
Yep. So let's, I have something I wanted to say, but I'll do it via my bad thing. My good thing is there was that one giant alien that you called from the tree people.
Yeah, he looked like he was made of bark.
He looked like, I mean, he had sort of Klingon-y, ridgy forehead, but different enough that it didn't look like a Klingon. And the dude, either they use stilts or he's just a very tall guy, but he's like 8 feet tall and just very cool. And I like when aliens look different. I like when they're, you know, clearly, like the brace face chick, as you called her, hardly any effort at all. But this dude looked awesome.
It was cool. He had like a weird head. He had like three fingers.
Yep. No, it was great, and I meant to check. Did Tiny Ron play him? Because he usually plays
Tiny Rowan?
No, what is his name? Deep Roy. Tiny Roy.
No, because he's tall. That guy is small.
Is he?
Yeah.
I'm confused. Who am I thinking of?
I don't know. Are you
There's
thinking of,
There's a dude
like...
who plays enormously tall guys.
Are you thinking of the giant from Twin Peaks?
No, that's, I know who that guy is, and that's not who I'm thinking of. No, never mind. Let's move on.
No, Deep Roy's a little person.
Is he?
Yeah.
What am I thinking?
He was, Scotty's sidekick in New Trek.
Oh, so he was. All right, I'm thinking of somebody else, and I'll probably think of it after we turn off the microphones.
Oh, good.
Okay, my bad thing. I don't get Troy at all when it comes to this kind of thing. This dude comes on board, talks to her for 30 seconds, and he's already got his fingers in her hair. She yep. looks very uncomfortable, like he's, like, we thought it was a mind rave episode. But no, this is just her being won over, apparently. Yeah. Looking uncomfortable and just letting men touch her, and then going to bed with them.
Like, seriously, he just starts, like, running his fingers through her hair, and like
on their first date.
Like, the first thing he does is just start running his hands all over her.
Now, look, if they'd been dating for a little while, if some time had passed, if they, you know, had dinner and then later in the evening, something like that, that's fine. But it was literally the first thing he did when they were alone.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just creepy as fuck. And the way Curtis plays it, and I don't know if she's being directed like this or if it's just her acting, but she plays it like she's being victimized. Like,
yeah.
She's uncomfortable and wishes he would stop, but then they're actually sleeping together and she has a choice. So mm-hmm. she likes it, I guess.
Yeah, it's like all she, like her body language and her dialogue are completely opposite to each other. Like, yeah. She looks really uncomfortable. But then when she's in the scene with Beverly, she's just like, oh, I'm so in love.
Yeah. I mean, isn't it great, that crazy passion that you get into? It's crazy passion. That's not what I saw.
And no.
The thing is, I know this chick knows how to act. I know it. I've seen it happen. I've saw it happen. It has happened. But it doesn't. She just looks like, I don't know. People throw the word rape around for a cheap laugh, and I don't mean that. But it looks like she's being taken advantage of. Let's say that.
Yeah, there's definitely like a sexual harassment thing going on here.
Yeah,
that I'm not
it's
super
stronger than
with.
Sexual harassment, but it's not a full on like rape vibe. But it's definitely you're uncomfortably close to me. Please stop touching me.
The guy is just sleazy. He's a sleazebag.
Yeah. No, the word smug is the best word of all for him. The thing is, I do like there's some good plot points of him negotiating. And mm-hmm. had it been a better actor and had the character been written better, he did some pretty clever stuff turning people against each other and so forth. But it just doesn't matter. Like, I just wanted him to go away.
I feel like they were trying to make him into sort of like a roguish character, and that's why she was supposed to be into him. But he just comes off as like a car salesman.
Yep. And the clothes he was in didn't help, because he was wearing very sort of seersuckery, gross, you know, hey, look at me, I can put you in this today.
Terrible. You know what the Enterprise needs is a genuine automated six-car monorail.
He needed one of those Lyle Landley hats.
Yes!
Then he would have been okay. I've sold wormholes to Ogdenfell in North Haverbrook. The idea of a wormhole is actually very cool. I mean, mm-hmm. and obviously they'll come back to that in Deep Space Nine.
Yeah, which is why they built a series around it.
What's that?
Which is why they built a series around
it. Right. The idea of a shortcut to a distant part of the galaxy is cool, and it opens up a whole area that we haven't been to, so we don't have to keep running into Romulans and Klingons and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. And I like that it's not stable, that it opens up, oops, Delta Quadrant. Oh, we better get out of here.
Well, I mean, that's the whole point, is that they talk about how there's never been a stable wormhole before. And if they can get one, like this instantaneous travel to like a distant point in the galaxy, that's a huge deal.
Yeah, absolutely.
And of course it is. That's the point of DS9.
I like that Star Trek science sort of stays consistent, and the only stable wormhole ends up being controlled by a higher intelligence.
Yeah, exactly.
Which I think is kind of cool. Like, they don't go back on that. It is hard to find one of those. But, I don't know. I like the idea. I like I wish they could have played up the creepiness of being dumped a million miles from home and being stranded, instead of it being, ha ha, the Ferengi are stuck. Yep. I think that could have been cool.
Yeah, they never treat that as anything sort of worrying, just because Data and Geordi know they can get back home, and we never see the Ferengi after they get ditched. Although we get a great reaction shot from them.
Yeah. Well, that may end up being our cover art. I may not end up going with your suggestion that we use Data or Troy and Beverly working out.
Yes.
Well, look, one or the other, I'm fine.
Or maybe I'll
whether
Photoshop
it's girl, whether it's hot ladies in tights or a Ferengi doing the Doc Brown's oily rags catching fire look. They're both good.
As it is known. Now let's talk about the Ferengi a little. They're a little better here.
This is the best we've seen the Ferengi, I
think,
feel like.
The show has realized, okay, they're not threatening. We fucked up. They're not threatening at all. They're kind of goofy. Let's just run with that.
Yeah.
And there's a couple of genuine laughs there.
Yeah, no, the Ferengi went through like a very small arc, I feel like, in TNG that you can see if you're the kind of person who will make stuff up to make the show work better.
Yeah, there's no arc. They just corrected themselves and said, yeah, these guys aren't scary. We better do something else.
Yeah, or we get like the crew being all like terrified of them, meeting them a couple of times and realizing, yeah, these guys aren't actually that intimidating. They're kind of stupid.
And there's a nice retcon in the extended universe that says they deliberately were trying to put out rumors that they were scary as propaganda, and it failed.
Yes, I like.
But that explains why early season one, they're like, ooh, the Ferengi, these guys are supposed to be terrifying.
They
then
eat
you see
people.
Them, oh, no, never mind.
Laser whips, huh?
Yeah, only one of the three guys crouched.
That's true.
Gradually, they're weeding out the crouchers.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually, they won't crouch anymore, and that'll be nice.
There'll be no crouching at all.
Right. But yeah, so they were better. They weren't great, but they were better.
No, and they had like some actual like moments that like there were some moments I actually enjoyed from them.
Yeah, there were a couple of laughs and a couple of legitimate.
The bit where the Daemon's demanding Picard get him a chair.
Right. Demanding that his Klingon servant get him a chair.
Yes.
That was pretty good.
And you can have my chair.
Which is just
Jeez.
Picard's cue to walk. Well, that means I have to leave then. I don't have a chair anymore. Bye.
Goodbye.
Nails, you got this. God damn it.
How
a lot of really clumsy Riker poker metaphors.
Oh, yeah.
I like the whole Riker poker thing, but really... too much. Don't call it out every 30 seconds. Seriously.
Yeah. No, I do like when we first get introduced to Smuggy McDouchington, he talks about how Riker's got a real poker face, and Riker gives him, poker, is that a game of some sort?
Yeah. If I'd had to pick a quote, I might have gone with that one. But yeah, that was pretty great. Otherwise, I mean, the whole Troy falling in love thing, P.U. Don't want it. Don't want to see it. Just go away.
And this shit'll keep coming up.
It will. And
like she falls in love with 8 or 9 other pasty white guys.
Mm-hmm. And they're all very boring.
Yep.
Hello there, Counselor Troy.
it's a pleasure to meet you, Miss Troy.
Yes. Hi. Hello. What else?
Oh, we also get the first appearance of Troy's love of chocolate.
Yeah, which is a part of her character.
Defining character.
Apparently. No, it's cute. She has a cute moment at the beginning where she's arguing with the replicator.
Mm-hmm. And I also like...
Oh, go ahead.
I also like the three messages from her mother.
Yeah. That's the thing. If you play Troy light, and if you play her, you know, like, sort of funny, like, the teaser of this episode was actually, she was actually really good. She's in her quarters, then Picard calls her to this function, and she's like, ugh, I don't want to go. And it's kind of cute. She's good at that off-duty sort of, you know, exasperated stuff.
Falling in love
stuff, not so much.
They keep wanting to put her in a relationship, or not even a relationship. They just want to hook her up with dudes.
Yep. I think hooker is a good word, Matt.
Yeah. Works really well.
What else? I feel like we need to say Mendoza more.
Oh, yeah. Mendoza!
Anything else?
Mendoza!
Any further business beyond Mendoza?
We got Ferengi pea blood. That was interesting.
Oh yeah, he was trying to poison Mendoza.
Mendoza.
And so he took a sample of his blood and smeared it all over, and apparently it's urine colored.
Yep.
I think the doctor they brought was just highly inept, but maybe not. All
right. Got your pee here, Daemon.
This is blood, clearly.
Yes.
I can't talk with these teeth in my mouth.
You're trying to trick us.
Yeah.
Everyone is always trying to trick the Ferengi.
That just lasers my whip. All right, let's get out of this, Matt.
All right, here's my quote.
You know, if this doesn't work, the thought of spending the rest of my life in here is none too appealing.
There is a bright side, Geordi.
You will have me to talk to.
That was my quote.
That was a pretty funny quote.
Yeah, no, I like that scene.
Yeah. All right. That is, thankfully, we can put this business behind us until we have to do the video wrap-up and then the written summaries.
Yep.
So two more times we have to revisit this episode, but we're at least we don't have to talk about it anymore.
No, that's true.
Pretty terrible. Pretty terrible.
Yep.
All right. Next week, our Irish pal will be joining us for episodes that I don't have the titles of right in front of me, but I know Gav will be here, so that will be
yes.
fun. We like that guy. I keep forgetting to mention our app, which I will mention now.
Oh, yeah.
If you have an iOS device, an iPhone or an iPad, you can go to the Apple Store, to the App Store, iTunes, whatever the fuck they're calling it now. I don't know. I have all Mac stuff and I can't keep track.
That thing, you know it.
Yes. It is, I think it's $1.99. It's not very much. And no, it's our entire episode guide.
I'm pretty sure it's $1.99.
Yeah. And it's our entire episode guide, which is new material, not stuff we talked about on the show, but entirely new jokes, new yep. observations, reflections after a year of you know, thinking about it and noodling it through of all the Kirk and Spock stuff, the original series, mm-hmm. the animated series, and all the movies.
Yeah.
You should check that out. It's indexed so that you can look it up by episode title. You can keep track of what you've watched. You can listen instantly to new episodes. New episodes, when they post, will pop up immediately in the app. It's got a lot of great stuff. Our pal Bob really went all out and made a great app.
Yeah, no, it's really pretty awesome, you guys.
And it's a lot of fun, and you should check it out.
Very proud to have our name attached to it.
Yes, and also we don't get any money for that. It pretty much goes into all like paying Bob for all the time that he put into it. This is not us raising funds. This is wanting to get our material in your hands and Bob's hard work in your hands and our jokes in mm-hmm. your brains because they're funny jokes.
Yeah.
All right. So that is all, Matt. Say your thing.
Mendoza.
See you, folks.
The Post-Atomic Horror Podcast is a co-production of Ron Algar Watt and Matt Robotham, copyright 2012. Please don't sue us. We're just doing this for fun.